That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top of June. I said that's life.
That's life.
Hit, because we always go live, just hit record.
It's already done. You're already on.
Oh, we're already recording?
Yes.
And you didn't even use one of your new sound drops yet?
Not yet. I was waiting for you to tell a joke.
Well, I don't have a joke.
Okay. Well, that is the joke. Oh, it needs more volume. You guys will never guess unless you read the title of this podcast. Who is with us?
Mr. Chip Foose.
Welcome.
No, Fred.
Fred from Arc Audio.
Hello.
And way to kick off season 3 of the podcast, huh?
I mean, you could not have a cooler guest.
Well, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, so you just got done with a day at Master Tech Expo and got exposed to what is the current trends in car audio and fabrication for interior guys. Any thoughts?
I thought this was old school radio. What do you call this?
Old timey radio.
The old fashioned car audio podcast.
Old fashioned car audio podcast with all the latest technology here at Master Tech.
Yep. Well, you know, it's kind of a play because Matt's a youngin. I've been doing this a long time. I feel old.
I am pretty young, though.
My body feels old, if that counts.
We are the old guys in this industry.
I still have a pull-out 8-track sitting in my garage, so.
Dang. Does it work?
And does Junior know what that is?
I've had a hard time trying to explain it to him.
Very cool.
Then again, I think it goes about the same path as an 8-track or a cassette, and he never understood what I meant by sticking a pin in to rewind it when the...
You know, I got to say, the first thing I thought about when I was here is the fact that we've brought everybody together. And when I worked for Boyd, Boyd always had a little bit of a, shall we say, a problem with other builders. It was, in his mind, they were his competition. And I always tried to tell him that, you know, I didn't look at other builders as competitors. I looked at them as potential best friends because they had the same passion that we have. Everybody's just trying to build something cool. And that's what I see here. And everybody's getting along. Everybody's talking to each other. And you could come here and meet somebody that maybe you thought they were a competitor, and you could meet a new best friend for life.
Yeah. That couldn't
everybody's
be more true.
Here, they all have the same passion, and it's really cool that everybody's working together. And they're sharing the ideas to grow the industry.
Yeah, I think the older I get, the more I realize that I think the most valuable thing in business for me has been relationships.
And agreed.
Before any one project or anything you've done, the relationships you have with people are what help grow a business and give you the ability to build cool stuff. Cool stuff doesn't get built without cool budgets.
True. Right? You know, John Butera, I don't know if you know who John Butera was. He's known as the godfather of billet aluminum. He started building hot rods and using billet aluminum. He said to me one day, he says, "Well, you know where money comes from?" I said, "The bank?" He said, "No, other people. You just have to figure out how to get
hold
it."
Hold on. We need a little more volume.
It's those relationships that will grow your business.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And so did you see anything technology-wise? Like, you are the epitome of handcrafted, right? I've seen you do crazy things.
Well, thank you.
I remember we were just talking about one of the early overhaul and builds. And I remember there was something on that build that we needed, like an arced pipe. And there's no tube benders around. And Chip's just like, "Oh, don't worry, I got this." And he throws this like big, I don't know if you remember this, but you threw this big tube of steel over your shoulder. And you went out into the parking lot and you're like, "Watch this." And he takes it over his head. And you, like, with a certain finesse, I don't know what skill, I don't know how much practice you had, but you just bring it over your head and it just hits the ground. It just puts the slightest arc. And then you pull it down like you're looking at bent up plywood at Home Depot, right? Like warped wood. And it's got, and you're, "Oh, no, a little more." And then you rotate it to the right, back over the shoulder, and you bring it down. And you're like, "There you go."
Well, like, that I learned, you know, I went to Art Center and that's my college education. I grew up with my dad, and I worked at Osher Corporation. But when I went to work for Boyd's, I ended up building the bucks to build all these cars, and then I went out to Marcel's Custom Metal, and I was working with them, and I learned so much working with Marcel's. And when we build a buck to actually build a shape, I learned from Marcel how to bend tubes. And he told me that the way he figured that out is he went over to his rack where on the wall he had all of his tubing, and he went to pull down a tube and it fell from the other side and was still on the wall on the other side. But when that tube fell and hit the ground, it created an arc in that tube. And that's how they discovered how to bend tubing.
All right. Hey, we're back. We had a slight technical difficulty.
Leave it to Gary.
Hey.
Well, just as that tube fell off the rack, centered our system here. Anyway, Marcel, he went over to his rack to pull down this piece of tubing, and he had knocked it loose on one side only. And when it hit the ground, it created an arc. And that's how he learned how to do it. And so we would use that system to build all of our bucks before we bent the sheet metal.
That's crazy.
So like I say, my second college education was working with Marcel and his son Mark and Luke. And I still work with Luke to this day.
Wow. It's strange as we transition, like our industry, as you've seen, is starting this transition from really hand-built stuff and then really getting into a lot of automation now for the higher end guys. In your world, do you look forward to that, to the automation of some of these processes?
I look forward to working with the people that know how to do it. Okay. I don't know how to do it, but I'm impressed by it. And just being here, you know, what you're doing is you're introducing this to a lot of people and showing how easy it really is. So it's phenomenal. And I will work with the people that know how to do this.
With your drawing ability, like, it's insane. We sat on stage with you today and watched you just make this art. Like, I've never had that experience to just sit and watch that come to life in front of me. Have you heard about, like, AI programs that you can tell them, like, hey, draw me a cool car and it will do it digitally? Like, what?
You're talking like ChatGPT or something.
Yes. Yeah. I have my best friend from Art Center. His name is Darren Guilford, and he is Disney's top production designer for film. Okay. He has shown me some stuff that is just phenomenal. And when I see his artwork, what he's creating for movies, you know, you go and you watch the film, but behind the scenes, what they're doing with the drawings and creating everything, and he's done movies like Titanic, Apollo 13, Inspector Gadget, Tron. He's just wrapping up The Haunted Mansion right now with some of the. I'm just phenomenal, yeah. Movies. Kingsman and Oblivion with Tom Cruise. Okay. Yeah, you know, the helicopter and all that. Well, he's the one that it's his responsibility for all this futuristic stuff. And it is wild to see the stuff that he comes up with before the film. I have more fun looking at what he creates. That to me is cooler than even the movie. Right. And to see what he can do, and he's always trying to get me to come to the the light side.
Right, right.
Because I'm still working in the dark side.
Yeah.
But I love the hand drawing.
Right.
And I'm lost. I've done a couple computer drawings, but I have to have somebody sitting next to me. I go, okay, I want to create this. What am I supposed to click on?
Right.
And then my problem is I'm so busy also out in the shop fabricating that I can learn how to do something on the computer. Then I go out and I'm out in the shop for 3 or 4 days and I go back to the computer and, oh, what was I supposed to do
start
there?
Start all over.
Yeah.
So, but I can pick up a pencil and it still works. I don't have to click anything. I just have to sharpen it.
Being an artist, what was it like going into Pixar Studios like that for your work on cars?
What was cool is
that was a captivating story, and I had no idea that you had that involvement in cars. Oh,
thank you. Yeah, that was really cool. That was so much fun. But when I'm working with them, I'm not in the computer part of it. I'm seeing their hand drawings for all of the, all the drawings that they're doing for the storyboard drawings. That's all hand created, mm-hmm. And then when they're acting out the parts and they're trying to create, you know, what the characters are talking like, it was so cool to be involved with that. But they're still doing the same thing I do.
Right.
I'm still hand drawing.
Right.
So then I would sit in the studio and start doing sketches and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? And they go, oh, yeah, no, we like that, but try this. And, oh, yeah, we want the face of Ramon to be all purple. Mm-hmm. We don't want the flames up front.
Yeah.
Because that's the character is all one color and then there's graphics on them. So it was really a pleasure to work with them. Like I say, I didn't get involved with the computer part of that at all.
Right.
Do you see that as more things use automation and custom car building, and even in the hot rod world, there's still a demand for the handcrafted side of it? Do you see that in the future, like, it'll go more automation and those builders that still use their hands? And I mean, we saw Levi was teaching here and you see some of those techniques and he's trying to pass that on and show some of these hand-built techniques. In your world of hot rod building, does that still live on? Is there still enough training for those types of guys? Or do you think that the future for the kids now are all going to be automated?
No, I think there'll always be a blend. And who it is that ends up doing the hand work, you know, they're going to have to know both ends of the spectrum. Because you can create something on a computer, cut it and make it work, but it doesn't necessarily bolt into an old car. Like, you know, if they want to make something really cool, you're cutting that fender, putting a new edge on it and making it so that it looks really cool and looks like it belongs, rather than just taking, you know, if there's a grill opening, either you're going to keep that same exact grill opening and make a new grill to fit in there, or do you want that grill opening to have a different shape on the original fender? Then you're cutting and modifying that fender. Then you're scanning it and making the new grill. Somebody's got to make those changes still. And they got to know both ends if they're doing both parts of it.
So what were your thoughts when you walked in and you saw the console, the dash out front on the showroom?
Well, that's the future of this whole industry. You know, the guys that want to do really, really cool stuff. Mm-hmm. What's happening now is the technology is allowing us to get there faster and cheaper. Mm-hmm. So if you don't pick it up and you don't do it, you're not going to get the work. Because you still have to build this car for a customer and you got to do it for a price. And the guys that can do it cheaper are going to get the work.
This is kind of based off the same conversations we had earlier today too, because, you know, we were looking at the CAD, you know, all, with the CAD class they had, we were looking at what Jeremy and you guys were doing up on stage. And, you know, we talk about the utilities of CNC, the utilities of 3D printing, and looking at some of those parts on that display on the rotisserie. I mean, it's quicker, it's faster, it's easier, but it's also less complex. But, you know, I still think the fundamental of doing it by hand is what gives a lot of people the creativity to be able to understand what's going on with the automation, and also will help people make them more proficient with that automation too.
Yeah. So Matt and
I was going to get into this.
Did a whole day of analog fabrication, and about we had, I think, 220 students for four sessions yesterday, and I would say that a third of those showed up to the automation classes this morning, and about half of those have automation, but still went to the hand fab classes. And I believe that all of us who grew up without an engineering background that learned by trial and error and, hey, don't do it that way, dummy, anymore, right? Like we learned a lot of ways not to build stuff, and we've progressed.
So a lot of people lose their fingers.
Well, yeah, Jeremy, who you're talking to.
I still have all my fingers, but there are some scars on them.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, do you have much of an engineering background, or did you just learn through doing it?
I learned through doing it. I have an industrial design degree, but I don't have an engineering degree. But I learned from my father, who, he back in the 60s, worked with engineers that would create all these drawings, and they'd bring him the drawings and say, you need to build this. He could look at the drawing and say, well, that's not going to work. Just build it. And he'd build it. They'd come out and look at it. Okay, we got to redesign it. They'd go back in, and while he was waiting for them to redesign it, he would build something that would work. Then they'd come out with the drawings. Okay, build this. Well, how about this? Then what happened is the engineers started taking his prototypes and just drawing what he built. So they would have both ends of the spectrum.
Right.
And I learned working with my dad how to make things work. So I know how to make things work, but I do not have an engineering degree. I have an industrial design degree, and which is mostly just how do we make something look cool?
Right. I at one point I had a job that required me to handle that interface from designers to engineers. And it was very interesting being a guy who grew up building stuff, you know, using basic woodworking tools and that kind of stuff, to see the way I always put it is that the designers would always design super organic shapes that could never be built. And then the engineers would turn them into square boxes of efficiency.
It's interesting. As a student at Art Center, I grew up building things and knowing how to make things work. And when I interviewed with Keith Teague from Ford Motor Company, he told me then, he said, you design what you know you can build.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, correct. He says, I'm interested in finding guys that can design things in the future. We'll figure out how to build it. And I thought, wow, you're spending a lot of money on drawings right. that can't be built.
Right.
And it works for me having my own business. I know that I'm drawing what I can build.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's interesting. I ended up, after he left, Jay Mays came in, was the director of design. And I did a whole lot of projects with Jay that were so much fun to do. But, you know, we got to be really creative and build things that I call it, you know, a lot of people were calling them retro cars. I call them evolution of things that were great. And it was fun to be involved with Ford and Jay Mays at that time. Knowing how to make things work, I know how to make things look cool, but still
right,
work.
Right,
you know, that's my job.
It's a heck of a talent. I think that that's kind of one of those, you always, hey, think outside the box. And I think one of those boxes is we don't want to box in designers. We want them to just have free reign. And then they design stuff that's very difficult or costly to build.
Mm-hmm.
And then especially, like you're saying, if they wad those drawings up and they end up in the circular file, there really was no point to them.
Well, you still need those guys to make guys like me think, well, that is cool.
Right.
I'll figure out how to make it work.
Right.
But I'm not the one that's drawing something that can't be built first.
Right.
You know,
I'll
figure out how to make it work and then I'll draw it.
Yeah. That's in our world, that's where Tom Miller, who is on stage with us today,
mm-hmm.
Tom's superpower is that 10 years ago, he wasn't a fabricator at all, right? Mm-hmm. And now he's an amazing fabricator and taught himself how to draw, but he also knows what he can build. And so for our world, he's just like, he puts
that's
all together.
That's the guys that you want to hire when you're a business owner. You know, I went to Ford and did a professional intern after I had graduated from Art Center. I knew the first day I was there that I needed to leave.
Oh, gosh.
When I got there, they told me where to go to get all my art supplies. So I went down, you know, down in the basement. You go down to this window, art supplies, and I go over there and I ordered everything that I needed to go back to my cubicle to draw. They put everything in a box and I picked up the box and said, thank you. And I turned to walk away and the guy says, you can't take that. And I kind of laughed. I said, or he says, no, you can't carry that. And I laughed. I said, it's not that heavy. He says, no. You can't carry that. You can only carry what you can carry with one hand.
Oh, wow.
And I said, why? And he says, it's a union thing. You can take what you can take with one hand.
Oh, my gosh.
But they have to have a union guy carry your art supplies to your cubicle.
That's wild.
So I gave him my cubicle number, and he says, we'll bring it to you. So I go back to my cubicle, and I'm sitting there. And the guy in the cubicle next to me, his name was Dave. He was working on, well, he had his pencil sharpener all apart on his bench. And he was filing on a piece. And I thought, that's interesting. And then pretty soon he's got his pencil sharpener back together. And then he's got his pencil, he's working on another part, and then it's all back apart again. And my art supplies show up, and I start drawing. And for 3 days, I watch Dave take his pencil sharpener apart, work on something, put it back together, take it apart, put it back together for 3 days. And on the third day, I hear him yell, yahoo, I did it. I said, Dave, what'd you do? He said, watch. And he puts his pencil sharpener in there and he goes, whew. He says, it doesn't vibrate anymore. And I said, how long have you been with Ford? And he says, I've been here 26 years. and I'm going to retire in 3 years, 8 months, 4 days, and 14 hours. I mean, he had it down to the hour of when he was getting to retire. And that's when I thought, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, it's a dream killer.
Yeah. I just thought, wow, nobody's accountable for what they're doing. You know, I grew up with my father having a body shop. And if I wasn't making my dad money, I wasn't going to have a job.
Right.
And that's when I thought, wow, okay, I need to get out of here and I'm going to go focus on hot rods because that's where my passion really is.
As you have obviously expanded to do a lot more as a, I don't want to say a job, but as a business, right? You're doing more than just building cars. You have a lot of responsibilities besides that. I get frustrated when at the end of the day, I don't have something that I've made that's in front of me that I feel like I accomplished something. That's true. The hardest part. Every time I try to take a real job, that's been frustrating. If you are spending a decent amount of your time not building stuff, does that get to you? Does it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You know, I've had people ask me all the time, well, do you like drawing or do you like building best? I like both, and I feel lucky that I get to do both.
Mm-hmm.
I love coming up with the ideas, but then I also love going into the shop and building it. You know, and there's, as I said earlier today, there's not a better feeling of accomplishment than when you've built something and it's done and you step back and you look at 100%. It, and whether it's yourself or the group that you've just built this with, it can be a pretty emotional moment, especially when you've spent 6 years on a car like Impression.
Right.
And that car's been up in the air and you're doing all this work on the bottom, but you finally get around to putting the top back on. You've got the hood on it. You've closed it all down. You've put all the wheels. And you drop that car down with the off the jack stands and you've put it on the ground and you're looking at it and you've adjusted the ride height and you finally step back and you're standing about 20 feet from it and you're just looking at this car and you're like, wow, we did that.
I think Gary was feeling that with Shaq's enclosure when it finally got upholstered.
I was just so happy I could see sleep in the future. So I was happy about that.
You know, overhauling was one thing. I called overhauling a sprint.
Yeah.
You know, is what we could get done in a week. Sometimes we were doing them in 3 weeks. But the cars that I build at Foose Design, I call those marathons. You know, we've spent more than 6 years on Impression alone. And it's after you've put that kind of dedication and commitment into a project. You know, overhauling was really cool. And you get emotional, but it's nothing like a six-year project. Or when I finished my Hemisphere. You know, I had designed that in 1990 as a senior project at Art Center. We finally finished that build, and it was one night in Metal Crafters building because I built it over there. And we dropped it down on the floor. From 1990, this was 2007, 17 years later. And I remember stepping back, and there's tears in my eyes, and I was really emotional. And that's when I realized that, wow. My son is 7 years old. That's 17 years. And it seemed like it went by like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. Then I realized how quick my son was going to be grown and out of the house. And I changed the way I worked. I wanted to go home and spend more time with the family.
I think we all hit that point at some point. You know?
Absolutely. I ain't gonna lie, we get tied up in all these projects, whether it's travel, building cars, or whatever. And unfortunately, it's either that milestone mark with our kids that we miss, or our kids are nice enough to say something that reminds us that we were home.
Yeah. My first kid, same thing. I grinded my career throughout that whole process. My wife really took care of the sporting events and her growing up. I work 6 days a week. And then my youngest now, I just cherish those moments and I have the time, make the time. Because you only get one shot.
Maddie won Installer of the Year. Oh,
yeah. Congratulations.
So I won Installer of the Year in 2016. And the morning of, my wife calls me and says she's going into labor. So oh, wow. I had to fly away from the event, which mm-hmm. was at the time held in Dallas. And I had to fly home and miss the event. But as I'm flying home, I have the Wi-Fi. And I see they call my name for Installer of the Year. And I land, and obviously I get all these texts, but obviously missed the event, but for obviously a great reason.
Well, they just gave it to you because you were having a baby, right?
Most likely. Most likely. 100%.
No, congratulations. That's really awesome.
So
for the people that weren't here, real quick, just to finish this out, because we only have like 5 minutes left. Is there any car, and for the obviously there's going to be people listening that weren't here today, any car that stands out to you as like one of your most memorable builds, most proud builds?
They all have a special place in my heart, but it's not the cars that really meant that much to me.
The people.
It's the people. I always said that overhauling was a people show.
Yeah.
The cars were just the catalyst to tell their stories. But one of them that meant that probably the most to me was a 69 Roadrunner convertible that we did for a guy named John. John was a pretty big man. I think he was like 6'4", probably 230 pounds. And he had this car since he was 15 years old, had a 440 in it, but his dream was to have a 426 Hemi with a 5-speed or with a 4-speed. We put a 526 Hemi in it with a 5-speed. And I put a Hemi badge on the fender. And when he pulled his blindfold off or opened his eyes, I forget which it was, but I just remember him with a crack in his voice. He says, "Does it really have a Hemi in it?" And Bud Brutzman, the producer on all the shows, normally it was, you know, we'd somebody take their blindfold off, they'd see the car, and then they got to look at the car a little bit, but then we would introduce, usually it was I would be introduced first, and then the whole entire A team would get to meet him. But Chris Jacobs might be there, and he was walking him through everything that he was going to, you know, experience that day. But Bud took advantage of the moment because Bud saw this emotion. And when he was, you know, with that crack in his voice, says, "Is there a Hemi in it?" And Bud said, "Go ahead and look." And he walked over and opened the hood himself. And this giant of a man dropped to his knees and started to cry like a baby. Mm-hmm. And on the show, on the television show, you saw about maybe 5 to 6 seconds of him, you know, getting emotional and then saying thank you to all of us. Mm-hmm. But he can't show you what really happened.
Right.
But John dropped to his knees and started to cry. And it took him a good 20 minutes before he composed himself enough to where he could say thank you. Mm-hmm. He would try to talk and he would just lose it and tell us about how this is his lifelong dream to have this and it's here. Mm-hmm. And when you move somebody with an automobile to that level, it's an amazing feeling. It makes you want to do it again and again and again.
Makes all the hard work worth it.
John, that was the one that really sticks in my mind. And it's not the car. It's his emotion. Yeah. It's people.
Yep.
People are more important than the car.
Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on and just making this happen. It's a great way to kick off our season 3 of the podcast.
Yes.
I hope you had a fun time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I know everyone here enjoyed having you, and I loved hearing you talk. You're a great storyteller. You're very poised, composed, and polished, and your little keynote speech up there was brilliant, and just watching you sketch what you did and the amount of time you did is mind-blowing.
Thank you. Well, in the words of Forrest Gump, I gotta pee.
All right. We'll see you later.
See ya.